But this is not a happy breakdown, although it's interesting. A lot of money on health care, but no health care.
Well, that's part of the issue, right? That's part of the reason for real reform, a conversation about real
yes.
reform, because there are a lot of folks making some profit in our healthcare system, as you know, and that's part of the margin that we have to tackle, because the kind of quality healthcare that we should afford to the entirety of the United States, you know, folks without, still millions and millions of folks without health insurance, is still, with you know, out of our reach because of what we call financial barriers. And it really is a question, it's two questions, right? It's a question of revenue, right? As Chuck was saying, how are we going to get the revenue? Are we going to be willing to look at corporate taxes, now on the books at 35%? But of course, that's not what we're getting from these corporations. Are we going to tax the wealthy? And are we going to look within our budget for the way that we've prioritized the expenditure of this pot of money called federal funds? Are we going to look at the ways in which we've prioritized spending of this money that have left areas like education at 3.5 cents of every dollar and a combined energy, environment, and science at 3 cents, and that's all the national parks, that's all science research, research and development, all kinds of renewable technology, and that's 3 cents of the dollar. So, you know, there's two questions up for grabs this tax day. How do we get more money in the federal fund, and how do we prioritize it differently so that our communities aren't left with the continuing conversation about cut, cut, and more cut?
All right. Well, we're out of time today, but we need to continue this dialogue with you, Joe Comerford. You're the executive director of the National Priorities Project. People can go to your website, nationalpriorities.org, and...
Right.
Correct?
And right under the publication section, they can go to Tax Day. And actually, we've been able to break out Tax Day down to programmatic costs, like one quarter of one penny for Head Start and one sixth of one penny for LIHEAP. So these are actually shocking.
This is
shocking
amazing.
Numbers.
I urge people to check it out. We need to get, to say goodbye now, but we're going to invite you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
You too. And that does wrap it up for another edition of Flashpoints.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints, which airs every weekday and can be heard again at flashpoints.net. Executive producer of Flashpoints is Dennis Bernstein. Technical director, Eric Klein. Roving producer is Miguel Gavilán Molina. Special projects and online producer, Jesse Strauss. Regular contributors include Catherine Austin Fitz for Community Business, John Gibler in Mexico, Kevin Pina on Haiti, and Friday co-hosts Francisco Herrera and Rene Saucedo. JR and The Block Report contribute to the program. To comment on today's program, please contact us at dbernstein@igc.org. Look us up on the web at flashpoints.net for our archived shows, and follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is Flashpoints News. Thank you for listening.
KBOO is a proud media sponsor for Portland Rising, March and Rally for Jobs and Benefits, No Cuts. On April 16th at noon, community members from all walks of life will join together to stand for jobs and benefits, not cuts. The march and rally will be in the spirit of Wisconsin, family-friendly and strong in spirit. That's April 16th at noon at Pioneer Square, located at Southwest 6th and Broadway. More info, kboo.fm/PortlandRising. KBOO is a proud media sponsor for Portland Central America Solidarity Committee's brunch on Sunday, April 17th. This year's brunch is inspired by the people's movement in Honduras, and the keynote speaker will be Gerardo Torres, spokesperson for the U.S. and Canada's International Commission of the National Front of Popular Resistance. The brunch will take place at the SEIU 503 Hall, located at 6401 Southeast Foster, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. More info, kboo.fm/PCASCBrunch.
It is 10:59, and you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM in Corvallis and Albany, and we're on the web at kboo.fm. Today, there will be an action called Moving Our Money from War Towards Peace, Disturbing War, One Taxpayer at a Time. At the First Unitarian Church, Southwest 12th and Salmon, there will be a light meal at 5:30. The program begins at 6 p.m. This annual event is a public redirection of taxes that would otherwise pay for war to organizations that fill the human needs we generally regard as the commons or the commonwealth. Redirection of federal taxes is an act of nonviolent civil disobedience. For further information, please contact Pam Alley, 503-285-6371. Coming up next on the Radio Zine, Dan Johnson interviews Ann Samuelson, a former Clatsop County Commissioner and outspoken advocate for outlawing the use of asbestos in the United States, and Linda Reinstein, co-founder of Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization about asbestos-related diseases. Your calls will be welcome. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. If you're not a member, join us now by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the tip jar. Stay tuned to KBOO, Community Powered Radio.
In the studio with me is Ann Samuelson, and our topic is asbestos-related disease. Okay.
Okay. And as I said before, this is Radio Zine, starting off a little clumsy on my part this morning. In regards to our topic, asbestos-related disease, we are talking about who gets exposed to asbestos-related disease, and the Center for Public Integrity reports the following. In addition to those heavily exposed, many others are mechanics, teachers from asbestos-filled schools, and wives and children of workers who brought home asbestos on their clothing. Most of these people had relatively light exposures and developed mesothelioma a disease that can take anywhere from 10 up to 50 years to detect. Asbestos use has plummeted since 1973 from 803,000 metric tons to just under 1,500 metric tons in 2008. The epidemic continues to take 10,000 lives per year in the United States. To help make our way through this maze of information, I do indeed have two guests, Ann Samuelson, former Clatsop County Commissioner, businesswoman, advocate for the abolishment of asbestos use in the United States, and in full disclosure, a friend of mine from Seaside. Ann, welcome.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be here.
All right. In addition, we're joined with Linda Reinstein. Linda became an activist when her husband, Alan, was diagnosed with mesothelioma in 2003. She co-founded the Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization in 2004 and now serves as president and CEO. Since 2004, Reinstein, a highly sought-after speaker, has frequently served as a congressional witness and resource for the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. In 2010, Reinstein was awarded the highest level of the Presidential Volunteer Service Award for her 4,000 hours of volunteerism during her lifetime. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Dan, for having me join you and Ann. This is exciting.
Well, I thank you for taking time out of your schedule. As I said in the opening there, 10,000 lives lost per year. We don't seem to be making any headway, Linda. Why would you say that is?
Well, I think Ann and I are clearly here today to raise the level of awareness to your listeners. We're making some headway, but when we deal with an invisible dust that actually is a carcinogen, it's very difficult to have people understand with the invisible dust and the latency period why Ann and I are here today, because there is no cure for any of these diseases, and prevention remains our only cure for asbestos-caused diseases.
Okay, let's talk lightly, and Ann, if you want to jump in here someplace, feel free. When we talk prevention, is there anything done that can prevent this disease from occurring, or are we still a long way away from that?
I would say, Dan, that we're a long ways away. And reflecting back on what Linda said, it's a latent disease, and so it's not like a car wreck or somebody getting hit by a train. It's a slow train coming, and so when people are around it, they think, oh, I'll just get it wet, or, you know, construction workers oftentimes are some of the worst in terms of exposure. So what happens is there's this lack of urgency about paying attention to something that's going to take maybe 20 years to fester and raise its ugly head. So it's really about education, which is why I'm just so honored to volunteer with Linda Reinstein and this organization that she and her husband founded. It's terrific to educate people. That's the only answer.
And so at this point, Ann, why don't we just step back a little bit in history? Tell our listeners why it is that you became involved with ADAO.
Well, I was introduced to Linda. The short story is I was introduced to Linda by a mutual friend. And for 29 years, I've had nowhere to put my grief and my anger about the loss of my father from mesothelioma and the anxiety about my secondary exposure, which is also called environmental exposure. You'll hear us talk about that a little bit. And I met her, and I looked at this organization, and I thought, wow, this is really something. And then I saw and was empowered through learning more myself. And I thought, I need to do this. This is important work, and I'm passionate about it. And so I've kind of jumped on board, and you know, like many people say, I work for Linda, and I do.
Linda, let me ask you this. Do you find that most of the folks that get involved with ADAO have experienced the same things that Ann has just described?
Oh, absolutely. Ann's story, which as tragic and as painful as it is very common. I'm also a mesothelioma widow and a single mom. And because of the latency period and the diseases that asbestos actually causes, it produces a sense of rage and anger, because it's not like as tragic as breast cancer or lung cancer may be if someone didn't have known occupational exposure. We can identify the substance, the carcinogen that actually caused the disease. So I think because we have so much great science out there and understand about the fibers, that produces a sense of rage that I think Ann has very beautifully described, how she's been able to channel her anger, pain, grief into doing something. For us at the Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization, it's all about three strong pillars. It's education, it's advocacy to shape public policy to ban asbestos, and it's really about community, bringing together Ann, her family, patients around the world, policymakers, labor, doctors and scientists. It's our very broad community that comes together. And as Ann was talking about social media, that's been something that's been so excited for ADAO, because we've been able in the last 8 years since we started is to really see a world without any boundaries or borders. And we can connect and share and educate and translate. It's so exciting. I'm sure your listeners now are kind of nodding, thinking that they also have social media tools that they access. And this is a way that we can share information. As we saw in Tunisia and in Egypt, we're in a very new shift of a digital revolution combined with education and knowledge. So we have young people that understand how their phones work, how Facebook and Twitter work. And Ann and I will commonly laugh with other people over 50, and we chuckle how technology is something we have to learn. However, someone like my daughter, they grow up with it. So it changes education to a very exciting world as a public health advocate for myself, that we can really change policy and prevent exposure just by shows like yours raising awareness, Dan. It's so exciting.
Well, let's take this direction for just a moment, and that is, tell us how your husband was diagnosed, and has diagnoses changed since that event so that people can determine sooner or be detected sooner?
Sure. Ann's father sadly lost his life, I believe, in 1989, and my husband was diagnosed in 2003. And again, Alan was my life partner, my husband, and my best friend, and because we've been married so long, this slight, persistent, slight cough was haunting me, and I, with a little humor, encouraged Alan to go get a physical and have it checked out. And my story, when I share the details, is a very common one when I testify in Washington. When I share it, other people in the audience will nod because they, too, similarly have these stories, where the normal patient has about 9 months of undiagnosed symptoms. They then have a surgical procedure, which identifies the cancer, and then you try to seek treatment options. So because of, as Anne said, the latency period is so long, you can imagine with invisible dust, common respiratory symptoms that might mirror other diseases, and the fact that these diseases, it does kill over 10,000 people in the United States every year, there's a sense of rarity that goes along with it. Or what I might say to Congress is I think there's a greater sense of ignorance, both with those who have high-risk occupation, early warning symptoms that may not be understood by some doctors who don't treat many cases, and also by defendants and companies that may have produced asbestos and want to shrug their legal, their liability to claimants and patients and families.
I want to jump in here real quick and add one sort of disclaimer, if you will, and that is that we here at KABU are not going to be, it is not our intent to be dispensing medical advice, as I'm sure it is not yours as well.
Thank you for making that really clear, Dan. I'm a mesothelioma widow. I am not an attorney, a lobbyist, a doctor. I share my personal story along with what I've learned over the past 8 years from other families, only to increase awareness, but never absolutely. And I think the important part also for your listeners is when they call in with questions, out of respect to the work that the Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization does, both nationally and internationally, we will not make any referrals or recommendations for medical doctors or for law firms. We feel that there's enough information on the web and people need to do that independently. We want to maintain our independence and credibility by being an educational resource center.
Very good.
And ADAO, I think really the premise is it truly is a voice for victims of
okay.
all kinds.
Okay.
That's really the key.
I want to shift gears just slightly here, and to our listeners, if you are a member of a family that either yourself or someone that you love has been affected with one of these asbestos-related diseases, our phone line is going to open up in just a few minutes. I'll give you that number now, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187, and we will welcome your call. But Linda, I want to go to something that I came across about an event that took place in a little town in Montana, about 65 miles south of the Canadian border, Libby, Montana. It was startling. It was sort of unreal, but it did happen. Why don't you tell our listeners?
Sure. As you found, Dan, with doing your research, this tiny, beautiful little town of Libby, Montana, happened to be where W.R. Grace mined vermiculite, which was contaminated with asbestos. And then, worse yet, not only did these poor people in this beautiful mountain town, where they sickened and also lost their lives, but because it was the magic mineral was how it was once referred. Asbestos was this amazing, cheap material that was impervious to water, heat resistant, very strong, and it was cheap. I mean, it was cheap. So you can imagine during the Industrial Revolution, when you come across a material that you can then use in ships, buildings, around pipes, it became a very hot commodity. And W.R. Grace knew that. So they mined asbestos from Libby, Montana. Then they shipped it literally across the United States. There's an amazing report, and I'd be happy to build a resource page for your listeners if you feel that's of need, but there's an amazing four-part series from Mr. Andrew Schneider, and he comments and did the investigation. There are 35 million homes, 35 million homes across and buildings across the United States with contaminated vermiculite and attic insulations.
Yeah, that was called zonalite.
Zonalite. And unfortunately, in my research, I discovered that W.R. Grace is still producing a product that they call specialty vermiculite. And it just kind of like, wait a minute, this is wrong. And I can just think of 10,000 levels. So, you know, it's amazing. Linda, we have another caller on the line. Leslie, are you there?
I am. Hi. Good morning.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I love this topic. I bought a house about 3 years ago, and it was built in 1945. And I remember my agent saying, you know, because there's popcorn ceilings in it,
mm-hmm.
and her saying, you know, you should probably get that checked because her dad had died of what you guys are talking about today, and you know, I was like, meh, it's no big deal. But I'm curious if it is a big deal. Like, what should I do about that?
I'm going to let one of my two experts jump in there and answer that.
You know, I'm going to refer you, just because I love this organization. There's so much information there, to the asbestosdiseaseawareness.org site. And you'll find there that there's a whole section with a picture of a house on it and where it can be in your house. If I were you, and I'm in the midst of renovating an old house in Astoria now, I would not touch it, and I would call in a professional that does abatement if you wanted to abate and see if there's any dangers of it flaking off and that sort of thing. And Linda may want to add something to this, but it's not for the do-it-yourselfer. People
right.
sometimes say, oh, if you get it wet, it's no big deal. Well, things evaporate, and we don't really know how much asbestos is safe exposure. Pretty much it's no asbestos is the safest exposure, not having any at all. And so you're putting yourself at risk if you get involved with upsetting that.
The reason why I was so happy to hear you guys talking about this morning is that there's a couple that I've noticed in the last 3 years, like cracks on the ceiling now, that maybe weren't there before.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother happens to work in the business years and years ago, and I thought, man, I wonder if that cracking is a problem. Okay, well, the abatement, when you say abatement, like where do you go? Who do you talk to about abatement?
I think
that's a really tricky subject, and out of fairness, Leslie, to your important questions, I think that some research on the website would be really appropriate, and I'd be happy to take an email and introduce you to a nonprofit that actually deals with abatement, because it's not something over the phone. Somebody may just turn into and hear a tiny piece of what we're talking about,
okay.
And out of context, this information can be deadly. So we want to empower everyone with the right information, and I'd be happy to build a resource page to Dan's specs to actually make that home that Ann described available. What's important is to know that the construction trade is still at risk. With 35 million homes contaminated and little knowledge, you don't want to touch it, as Ann says. However, you want to understand where it may be, and I think our house diagram would help you. Homes built after the 80s are less inclined to have it, but that doesn't mean they won't have it. So I think being an educated consumer and homeowner is essential. When we talk about how many deaths every year, we're actually going to be honoring workers on April 28th with Worker Memorial Day. I mean, the World Health Organization talks about 107,000 workers die every year around the world. Those are big numbers. So I certainly don't want to give you information about a home abatement that is misleading or another listener actually hears and then doesn't hear the rest of the
program. I totally understand.
Yeah.
Is there a way to give my email off the air?
You know, Leslie, if you call back after the show is over with,
okay,
just leave a note with Mary Jane,
okay,
and tell her that you would like to leave your email address so that you know, one of my two guests could get in touch with you.
Well, and
I would love to do that. I'm on my way to work, though, so maybe I should just check out the KB website, and would you have some information there?
If you had a link to the asbestosdiseaseawareness.org, she could email info and get right tapped in to everything.
Correct. Yeah, that might be even your quickest way to be able to get the answers you're looking for.
I will. I'll do that. Thank you guys very much. I've been wondering for 3 years about this question, so it was great today.
Well,
thank you so much for all your help.
Good luck to you, Leslie, and thanks for the call.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Linda, I want to get to another subject. You had indicated that you had testified before Congress in the Senate, and you had just mentioned the World Health Organization. And I understand in some of my reading that the World Health Organization has actually suggested that in strong ways that the asbestos should be abolished. With all of this content and context, why can't we ban asbestos?
Well, I think that's a million-dollar question that I'm still scratching my head as a widow over. We can ban asbestos. Over 55 countries around the world have successfully. Croatia has banned asbestos. South Korea have. I mean, the United States is a laggard in protecting public health, and my personal opinion is because there's so much liability around asbestos that when you ban a substance and you draw awareness to the fact that it is a carcinogen and it could be in homes and what if you worked in the substance, it just raises a red flag. So I think it's been conveniently ignored. I think for your listeners, we actually, the Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization, actually built a website called Ban Asbestos US, and none of your listeners have to write this down. We'll make a page for this. But it's so confusing. We actually built a website dedicated just to banning asbestos, where you can actually log in and send a letter to your members of Congress so you can have your voice heard. So it's very complicated, and I think when somebody like either my husband or Anne's father are diagnosed, many times families are so shattered that are left behind that fighting this issue becomes just, you would feel like Prometheus holding up the world. So I think there's not a simple answer why it hasn't been banned. We continue to work at a stakeholder level, which I'm really proud about. My co-founder, Doug Larkin, and I, we attend congressional hearings and meetings, and we sit there with the chemical companies and others trying to shape public policy with education. We're making progress, but in 1989, the EPA actually tried to ban asbestos, and believe it or not, in 1991, it was overturned. So we're pushing a rope here sometimes, and it's uncalled for, and I think your listeners are going to feel, probably share the rage and frustration Ann and I have about trying to do something. If we don't have policy that's banned asbestos, then it's our next job is to educate people. There is no reason why people can't understand, like your great listener who called, Leslie, where it is, what do I do, how do I know? Those are important questions everyone deserves the right to have an answer to, a real answer.
Now, I understand that Senator Patty Murdy from Washington has been very vocal in her support for eliminating asbestos. Do you have any other major players in Washington that are standing behind you?
Absolutely. I mean, Senator Patty Murdy has taken the leadership on this since 2003. We work with Chairman Boxer also in the Senate side, and there's many House members that feel strongly like Ann and I do. And we also work within the White House and the Surgeon General. So we do an interagency approach with the Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization because it takes a long time to shape policy. As you've done your research, Dan, sometimes you can work 10 to 15 years to pass legislation that will indeed ban asbestos. In the meantime, I've gone to enough funerals and written enough condolences notes. I'm tired of it. And that's why we say at ADO, we want to turn our anger into action. We want to do something productive with the hurt and grief and rage that we feel. So
we have another caller on the line. Crystal is waiting. Crystal, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you for your call. What would you like to share with us?
Two things. To continue on Libby, Montana, the scariest thing about that was that R.W. Grace didn't lose in the class-action lawsuit against them.
It was an incredible injustice.
Yeah.
And that took forever, I guess, for the community to get together to actually do that. And I still see asbestos in all sorts of places, and I guess I'm most concerned that if it's not yet banned, that the government should at least be aware of it, and I see it in a lot of government buildings. And I saw men in sort of hazmat suits going into I live in subsidized housing, and I saw them in another building removing the popcorn ceilings, but they had the whole gear, and it just looked like, you know, like E.T. was in there or something. So they're aware of it, but how many buildings, if it's been since 1980 that it's not really being produced anymore, and it's taken them this long to start removing it from subsidized housing, where they're not telling us about it. They tell us about lead. They educate us on lead, but nobody's mentioning asbestos.
Well, Linda, if you're still on the line there, let me jump in here for a second. If they're removing the popcorn from the insulation and other parts of the structures, what do they replace that product with?
Well, since asbestos was used, you know, and began being used heavily in the 40s through the 80s, so you can imagine with science and technology, we're a very different world right now with construction. Substitutes do exist. There's lots of materials and choices. No one has to feel like they are bound to using asbestos or that's going to be so prohibitive to replace it. So we want to get away from any of the replacement issues because you're absolutely right, Dan. Safer substitutes do exist, and homeowners deserve to have a choice. We still in the United States, believe it or not, we import over 700 metric tons of contaminated products every year. Yes, it's gone down, but that's still not okay for Ann and I. 700 metric tons just this last year, and if we think about it, there were higher numbers in the past. We also have a hazardous waste disposal problem. So it just doesn't go away. We need to get smart fast and have policy that protects public health.
Well, and I think another caveat to that, Linda, is that when we met the doctor from Mexico at the conference that I attended, and her workers are being harmed making these products that we are importing some of. And so it's really a leadership issue for me being an American. Why in the world is the United States not having the wherewithal and the conscience, the serious conscience, to ban asbestos and show that leadership? Where are we?
You know, and that's your timing, the timing of your show, Dan. I don't know if you had a crystal ball, because Ann and I were smiling about it last night in a way. Your timing of your show is actually perfect. Just 2 days ago, the Canadian government agreed to fund an asbestos mine expansion in Canada. Yes, they've agreed to fund an it's called the Jeffrey Mine expansion. So what's going to actually happen in Canada is they will go in and they will mine asbestos and they will send asbestos products, bags of asbestos, to developing countries. So then you'll have someone in India, possibly Bangladesh, Indonesia, then making a cement roof or piping, all with contaminated materials that we know, and the WHO and the International Labor Organization all agree every fiber of asbestos is a carcinogen and there's no safe level. And Canada is going to mine more asbestos. It's pretty shattering when you think that dollars are more powerful than someone's lives.
And just sort of an addition to that, Linda, in some of my reading, I discovered that our nemesis, W.R. Grace, actually has three operations in Canada themselves. So, you know, it's and Crystal, if you're still there, I thank you for being patient as we talk through this. But in the Libby Montana case, I think it was very much like lambs being led to the slaughter. And that to me is totally criminal. We have another caller on the line. Dan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. How can we help you?
Well, comment and a couple questions. I had a good friend who just died last year. He was 62 years old, and he did remodeling. And I remember him remarking that he had to deal with asbestos wrap around old furnace ducts. and that he would paint it is what he would do. But he got just suddenly esophageal cancer. It either came from his lungs or spread to his lungs. And it just reminds me that back then we were all working with that stuff. And and my question is this, what is replacing it? Is that dangerous also? I remember working on panels on a house, asbestos paneling, and we'd be putting on a substitute that was a mineral composite of some sort. And then my other question is talc powder that they used on babies and stuff, was that, I heard a rumor that that was, had asbestos in it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dan. Linda, we talked briefly about that first part of Dan's question about other replacement products for asbestos. I'm not aware of any. I'm wondering and looking at Anne to see if she can pull anything out of the air. Are you aware of anything?
Well, you know, it's certainly not healthy to inhale any airborne anything, I don't think. And I don't want to ignore the caller's question, but I think talc is a whole nother issue, and there's lots of other issues around that. I think exposure to asbestos causes all kinds of cancers. I know that to be true. And I know when my dad was diagnosed, he didn't have a cough. He just couldn't breathe when he went up four flights of stairs. So when the onset happens, it's different with everybody. Nobody has a set pat answer on how these things go. And so construction workers, absolutely, painters. My dad got it. His first exposure he identified was when he was putting paste on pipe, and he would mix it up and put that on boiler pipe. So it's very airborne then.
You know, we're going to take a 60-second break here. When we come back, we'll welcome your phone call, 503-231-8187. It's 503-231-8187. It's 11:31. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Well, we're back. I'm Dan Johnson. This is Radio Zine. Our subject today is asbestos-related diseases. We have Linda Reinstein on the phone with us and Ann Samuelson in the studio. Phone number is 503-231-8187. And we were talking off air. You want to touch on something regarding the blue-collar segment of our population.
Well, you know, one thing this disease does is that when it hits you personally, it really hits you personally. My dad was a blue-collar worker, union plumber, local 290 out of Portland here, and worked on the coast and had a business. And what I've seen is as this organization grows, I said to Linda, I said, you know, what I really want to do in my part is I want to reach out to that blue-collar worker. You know, there's workers that worked in the manufacturing of asbestos products, construction trades, you know, electricians, fitters, carpenters, sheet metal workers. There's auto mechanics, there's boiler makers, shipyard workers, firefighters. Some folks in our military have been exposed. Innocent people, by the way. Innocence is really a key point. People should not die from what they do for a living when they're getting close to their retirement years or younger. And daughters of tradespeople. At the conference, I met a woman, Julie, and she's 39 years old and is fighting mesothelioma. My God, my biggest fear is that. And so I was really empowered by that. And I thought, you know, we've got to be reaching out to that blue collar worker that's just going to work every day thinking, oh, I'll just get it wet. And that's enough. So I'm hoping this radio show touches some of those folks and they think twice, and prevention is key because they need to be at the table with us. Their lives, they build our buildings, they build our schools, they build our hospitals. Their lives really do matter. My dad's life mattered. Their lives matter.
If you're among those that Ann just spoke about and you want to give us a call, feel free, 503-231-8187. Phone line is open. Now, Linda, a question for you. Ann just spoke about those folks in the blue-collar trades that are likely to, you know, be infected with these diseases. Your husband was an IT worker, isn't he? Or wasn't he?
Yeah, Alan actually did wear a white shirt to work every day and a suit and tie when I actually met Alan back in the 80s. But as Ann and I have shared, the latency period is so long, it was in the 60s that Alan actually was a metallurgical engineer and did work on nuclear submarines, did home repairs, so he had many different kinds of exposure, but occupational exposure, as Ann said, I mean, you don't want to pay the ultimate price for your job, which is your life. So Alan did have both kinds of exposure. But in the latency, we used to, you know, climb Half Dome and ski Black Diamonds, and it was that tiny little cough. But what Ann said about her father was there were no symptoms. So that's why we want your listeners to actually go to an easy URL is adao.us. At our website, we have early warning symptoms in Spanish, English, and French. And we also have high-risk occupations in multiple languages because we think that in a day of digital technology that we can translate everything into about 60 different languages, and we want people to understand who is exposed, what are the symptoms, and where do you go for help in a general way. And I'm hoping that this show that you've really taken the lead on, Dan, helps your listeners in Oregon. But as Ann and I will tell you, we're going to share your link to viewers literally around the world.
Okay, that's a good start. Okay, thanks. Before I finish that thought, we've got Jesse on the phone. Jesse, are you there?
Yes, sir. Hi, how are you?
I'm terrific. How about yourself?
Good morning. Well, I have cancer.
Uh-oh.
And I'm trying to find out. I was in construction for years and was around it. Every building, when I built the big buildings, I have a breathing problem real hard. And I go to the Legacy Hospital over here. But they don't tell me what I have, really. They're kind of wondering.
Your doctor won't tell you?
Right. Well, they're not oncologists. I'm a primary care, and then I'm seeing a urologist again next week.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, in a couple weeks. And I'm a little bit in the beginning stages, I'm trying to stay away from bad advice, so I'm...
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Can I ask you how old you are, Jesse?
I'm 70.
Oh, you're just a kid.
Thank you.
You're just a kid.
Yeah, I have a 90-year-old sister and another one, 88.
Oh, man.
They call me the kid.
Yeah, the rebel rouser.
Yeah, Jesse James.
There you go. Jesse, how long have you been diagnosed with cancer?
Since
05.
Yeah, the first indications. Yeah.
And
PSA and a high Gleason score.
Okay. I'm sure my guests will understand what those terms mean. Let me ask you this. Are you seeing because I can even tell in listening to your voice, Jesse, that sometimes you may have a bit of a breathing problem. Are you seeing a pulmonary physician now?
No. I would like to. I don't know what direction to take. I'm right at the stages where I need to do that, things like that.
Do you have
doctors is what I need?
Do you have access to a computer?
Yes.
I would go to adao.org.
Adao.org.
Hey, Dan, it's .us. adao.us.
Okay.
.us.
Okay. adao.us. U.S.
And I think what you can get from that, sir, is you could probably get a handle on questions you need to be pressing forward with your physician. One of the things I saw firsthand from folks that are surviving and fighting, we call them warriors at ADAO, these diseases, is they are just hell-bent public advocates for themselves.
What does ADAO mean?
It's the Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization.
Yeah.
And it's a great resource to find out. We don't give referrals to physicians. I'm a volunteer with the organization. Linda is CEO. She's also on the line and president. And so we have to be careful about that. But I think you can look through there and you can actually, you know, it's confusing when you don't feel good and then you've got to go ask a doctor questions at the same time and then retain it and figure out what you're going to do, I know. But I think it's got some good template information there.
And that's what one doctor said I had. Is that part of the same thing?
Say again, Jesse.
It was one doctor said I had pulmonary breathing problems. I mean, breathing, and asked me if I was a smoker and on. No, I haven't been a smoker.
Hey, Jesse, how about this? How about you take my email? It's Linda at ADAO.us, and I'll have some private offline exchange because too, as Dan heard, your breathlessness needs to be treated. Your doctor, you need to see, I would suspect you need to talk with your medical team and get a comprehensive plan together.
Yes.
And I'd be happy to try to share some general resources with you that would enable you to make some of your own decisions. But your breathlessness is could be heard by me, and I'm sure Ann and Dan.
Yeah.
And that's not okay. We want to get you good care.
Yeah, and one of the things that's going to help you do, Jesse, is when you do see your caregivers, you're going to be able to ask them good questions. And
that's ADAO Linda, right? Do you have a phone number?
I'll do that offline.
Okay.
So I'll make offline. That email available, Linda at ADAO.us, and I can hopefully give you as Dan and Ann are saying, some general questions that you can better ask. And it's important to empower patients with the understanding that you need to be an advocate and help be able to ask your questions. But sometimes it's hard for one person, especially if you've already been diagnosed with cancer. So how about I help you with Ann and we get you some questions, and Ann's in Oregon, and let's see if we can put our arms around you, Jesse, for being brave enough to call and also help you get a little advocacy to help you maneuver these mazes.
I'll take a phone number offline, and I'm here in Portland, Oregon.
All right, Jesse, we'll get that.
Jesse, thanks for your call, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to Radio Zine right here on KBOO FM 90.7. I started to give you our web address, but I'm Dan Johnson. Our subject today is asbestos-related diseases, and if you have some of the same experiences that our just previous caller Jesse had, and you want to talk about it, our phone number is 503-231-8187. And I will say this, Ann, I would imagine that Jesse's experience or experiences are not anything new.
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but it's sort of like the luck of the draw. When my dad was diagnosed in 81, I think, he couldn't breathe. He went up these stairs, and so he went to his primary physician, and he said, "I can't breathe. Take a chest X-ray." And it was a big black spot. Next day, he's at Providence Hospital up here in Portland and got a good oncologist and a pulmonary person. Folks in rural areas, I think, in terms of Oregon especially, if their physician doesn't have that connection, or like Linda said, you know, it's a little cough. Oh, big deal. How many times have we all had a little cough? Well, here you go. And so what has to happen is people need to be educated about asbestos-related diseases, the symptoms. The website does a great job of that. And so you have the appropriate questions to ask.
And you bring up something that there is something besides mesothelioma that there are several other diseases that we have not touched on.
Well, there's two different types of mesothelioma. There's peritoneal, and there is the the one around the lungs, the mesothelioma, and there's peritoneal mesothelioma. So and you can't live without that sac that is around those organs, and so that's why it's so tough to treat, and why the surgeries are so radical and the treatments are so harsh.
Okay, we have plenty of time left. If you want to give us a call, phone line is open, 503-231-8187. We're talking about asbestos-related diseases. If you know of someone, or if you yourself have been infected with one of these diseases, then give us a call. We'd like to talk to you, and perhaps our two guests might be able to provide some resources for you. What I want to do right now, Ann, is I want to kind of like, if I can, if there's any way to do it, make an upbeat sort of thing. Is there anything looming in the near future that you've seen that indicates that, you know, maybe we can get a hold on this, or there's some great medications coming out, or something that gives a little hope?
Well, actually, Dan, I don't want to be a real downer. I think some folks are working really hard on this, and I'm not a medical expert. I'm just a daughter of a mesothelioma victim who's had exposure herself, and who now is through Facebook and ADAO joined globally with many others. And that grief has turned into action, and I'm pretty excited about that. But just to give you an example, in the tribute I did for my dad in the program for the ADAO conference just a couple of weeks ago, I did a little bit of research, and my dad was on one of the chemotherapy drugs he was on, and he was on four experimental drugs, which was how he lived 18 months, was this being an experiment. And one of those same drugs is used now that was used 28 years ago. You know, so what I'm saying to you is it doesn't get the press that some of these other cancers do. It doesn't get the attention or the funding. You know, ADAO is fighting hard for cures too. And so I think that when we look at it, there certainly has not been enough progress. And prevention is the only key. I mean, that's really what this organization is about, because that's what we can do.
Okay, we're going to take another phone call. And when we get back, write this down so you don't forget it, because I'm old and left-handed. Prevention in big letters. We want to talk about that. We have Betsy on the phone. Betsy, are you there?
I am.
And how are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. I just have a really quick question.
Okay.
My father, who died about 5 years ago, worked in the steel mill all of his life, and he was never diagnosed with anything related to asbestos, but he did die of lung cancer, and I'm wondering if your guests know, would there be any connection to that?
Betsy, I'm really sorry that your father worked in a steel mill and died of lung cancer. And Ann and I wouldn't have the pathology and the tools over the phone to deal with this question straight on. But in a general way, there are many steel workers that have been diagnosed. Lung cancer claims, we think lung cancer, asbestos-caused lung cancer, probably it claims, you know, more than 4,000 to 6,000 lives every year. If we lose 10,000 people every year, mesothelioma may be 3,000, but there, as Ann said, there are other cancers also, esophageal, lung. So lung cancer is very common for asbestos workers and environmental exposure. And sadly, after someone's passed away, it's very hard to go back and look at pathology. And that's not my area. But I think learning high-risk occupations, as Dan talked about, prevention, and then although it's a very scary diagnosis and we sometimes wonder what do we do, is to look for empowerment and knowledge so that we can change direction on this disease and hopefully make a difference.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you very much for doing the work you're doing. It's very important, and thank you both for
being here. Come join us over at ADAO. We need lots of volunteers, and we'd love to have your help.
Find us on Facebook.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Betsy, thank you for your phone call.
You're welcome. Thanks for the broadcast.
You bet. Okay, I want to talk about prevention, and Anne, we'll start with you. Obviously, any form of prevention starts with education. Where do you begin?
Well, I think you identify, particularly in your, and again, I'm going to refer you back to this website because it's just so good, the ADAO website, and they actually have a picture of a house there in little hotspots where you can find it. But when one of the things people do when they, and I'm just going to give you a few examples, there's no way that we can cover everything here, but when you have an older home like a Victorian home, we have a lot of those in Astoria on the coast, and there's a lot of here in Portland, and you have that asbestos flooring, you're a lot better off to just put new wood flooring over instead of trying to get to that fir wood flooring underneath that asbestos tile, unless you have professional people come in and do whatever they're going to do with that. So it's really having respect for the material. I mean, you have to have respect for the fact that it doesn't take a lot to hurt you. They don't really know what is a safe exposure. We think there's no safe exposure. So it's best not to play with it at all. And when you choose a contractor, I'm going to talk a little bit about that because I used to be a contractor. And you can go to the Oregon Contractors Board website to make sure they're licensed. You can check if they have a bond and see how long they've been in business, see if they're real, ask for references. Where have they worked? Where have they done this kind of work? And they need to be certified as a consultant if you have a consultant come in. A lot of people roll out of bed in the morning, particularly in this economy, and say, I'm going to go do this. Everybody wants to be a contractor. Well, are you really getting somebody that has the knowledge and the quality and expertise that you need to have in your home and have in your environment? And that's a huge prevention thing. And again, it comes down to what Linda talked about just a little bit ago, being an advocate for yourself.
Right. Linda, how about you?
Well, I love the prevention section, and frankly, I wish we had another hour because this is where my passion really comes out. And I think that knowledge is power, and prevention is key. And the good news is we can do something. You can actually, if you're an advocate, whether you're a patient or you're a homeowner, you can write clauses into your, say you're building a home or doing some remodeling. You can make a very specific contractual clause that tells your builder you do not want any asbestos products. We have a choice in the United States where we get to choose what we do, what we buy. So if we're louder and say we're not going to accept asbestos products anymore, then the Consumer Product Safety Commission will obviously have to listen to our complaints. We don't want breaks that are contaminated. We don't want attic insulation that can cause cancer. We don't want children's toys, which ADO did product testing when there was a child's toy that was contaminated with asbestos. I think having, as a mom, having the opportunity to make good decisions for my daughter and that will hopefully impact her children is not only my right, but it's my responsibility. So prevention actually starts at home, and we need to educate everyone, not in a scary way, but in a positive way, that they can be empowered with knowledge.
Okay, and we have time for one more phone call. If you have a question for either one of my guests, feel free to pick up the phone, 503-231-8187. And Linda, I'm gonna come back to you here for just a moment. I was asking Anne a little bit ago, looking for a bright spot down the road, a little light at the end of the tunnel. From your perspective, from what you've seen and heard, how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm big on not being foolish, but I think hope is a really important thing. I think diagnosing disease is very important. Seeking care at a comprehensive cancer center if you have cancer is important. You want to go where the best and the brightest are. I'm actually seeing a shift in patterns. It's not good enough. We don't cure these diseases, but I'm seeing people live longer, have a better quality of life, and having their symptoms, like Jesse, his breathlessness, possibly treated with some sort of medicine or some aspect of treatment. So I'm actually, there's no cure. Anne's absolutely right. But there's improvement. Once upon a time, you died 6 to 12 months after you were diagnosed with mesothelioma. Although my husband had a radical surgery, which they broke a rib, removed his lung, stripped off his pericardium, replaced his diaphragm, pretty scary, he lived 3 years. He fought very hard. And Anne's father didn't have that luxury. I think he lived for 18 months. So we're seeing people live longer, and the quality of their life is improving. But it's still not good enough for me because we can prevent every single one of these diseases or deaths just by eliminating exposure. So it, I feel that we're sort of on the cutting edge like AIDS. We understand what causes AIDS. We understand about breast cancer. We understand now about asbestos-caused diseases. And I think that with shows like yours, Dan, and the opportunity to push education forward, we can actually do something about this hideous disease.
Okay, we have Herschel on the line. This will be our last phone call for this morning. Herschel, are you there?
People that have asbestos shingles, and I've done... handyman work around there, but I've been kind of afraid to even drill a hole in their asbestos shingles.
Listen to your fear.
Okay.
That's my advice to you, my friend.
All right. But, I mean, it's just live with it. The shingles are up there, and I guess you just live with it. I mean, it's just don't move it, touch it, or screw into it, or what's your advice? Just
you need expert advice. That's not something Ann and I should really touch. You need to talk to professionals that deal with abatement and construction, and we'd be happy to put forth a nonprofit organization that does just that. But this is dangerous for us to tell you what to actually do. The not touch it is the common sense part, but if there's a natural disaster or something happens, buildings tumble down like the World Trade Center. So not touching it sometimes isn't good enough, and we really want you to be fully educated, so maybe we can build a link to this nonprofit so you can get those questions answered.
All right, thank you.
Herschel, thank you. And Todd, our crack engineer, has informed me we do have time for one more question. And who is there, Todd? Toby, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for squeezing me in. Would you touch on the options of leaving the material alone and not disrupting it as actually being a safer option than trying to abate it? And so the method of abatement usually leaves some residual that it's just impossible to get out of the air, and are we better off to leave it alone if we can?
My short answer is sometimes that's best, but you really need to call in, like Linda said earlier, professionals to decide what condition that material is in. Is it cracking? You know, what does it look like? And call in an abatement specialist that does that and can give you the best advice.
And I would imagine
that cat to guard the cream.
I would imagine, Toby, that if you had a good abatement specialist take a look at your property, if they felt that it would be to your advantage to leave it alone, they would tell you.
Right.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, that would be my thought. Linda?
Yeah, I just think that we can create a whole fear here and see people going out and starting to disrupt it, and create more of a problem than if it's just left alone and encapsulated or not disturbed.
Right, and that's part of the education.
The problem is once it becomes airborne, not while it's in its solid state.
You're absolutely right. Not to touch it is the first primary sort of line of reason, but I think having people understand what's friable, what's not, where's the contaminated pipe located, is it in a walkway, will it be disturbed with renovations? I think understanding more about where it is and what shape it's in is important, and that's not something that Ann and I are licensed to discuss. But you understand this, so we want to get people to the right resources so that they can make these intelligent decisions for themselves and their families.
And one good way of starting.
I just don't want them to overreact.
Sure. And I can understand that, Toby, but one good way of starting that conversation is perhaps by going to our guest website, adao.us, and starting to formulate some of your own ideas based on what their information is.
No, I think that information is always key, and not to react to the first thing you hear.
Absolutely.
Good. Well, that's a good program. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for calling, and thanks for listening. We're starting to wind down. We've got just a few minutes left. Any final thoughts, Ann?
Well, one of the things that I did before I got involved with ADAO is I wrote some legislation. My father died when there was a statute of repose, and I won't get into the legalese of all that, but my mother was not, she was entitled to, but because we were in Oregon and there was no wrongful death trial when you died of asbestos in Oregon at that time, she did not get access to the bankruptcy trust funds that were set up. And so she gets a state accident check every month, which is probably about 20% of my father's income, what it would have been. And so I tried again this legislative session because in my mind, justice has no timeline. And I just wanted to send a shout out to Senator Bonamici for looking into my eyes and trying to help me. And we wrote the bill. I did my best to get it before Judiciary. And the chair of Judiciary said, there's no support for anything with asbestos this legislative session. So having said that, I just want to say from the congressional delegation to the state delegations to whoever legislators are, if all of us who are victims or all of us who know anybody, and Linda knows this all too well, look in their faces, look in their eyes, and let them see that these diseases have faces, they have lives, they have families, and they're real people. And when you make these decisions and these choices for us in your lawmaking, as lawmakers and as leaders, you're affecting our lives.
Linda, you have 33 seconds.
Join us. Join us on our international social media community. I'll put my emails out there, and we want to be friends in your community and make this problem go away. And I really believe together change is possible.
Thank you very much, Linda Reinstein from Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization, and Samuelson, my friend from the beautiful Oregon coast, for driving all the way over here on this Friday morning. You've been listening to Radio Zine. Asbestos disease and its related topics has been our subject. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for our callers. That'll do it for this segment, and look forward to joining you again soon.